right, welcome back to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now chatting with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer at Merk Investments. Axel also manages the ASA Fund, active participant in resource stocks, especially precious metal stocks. Axel, let's start off by discussing the volatility in markets. It reigns supreme. It was actually a lot of people's thought that it would happen this year. A lot of volatility in markets because of the new administration really shaking things up with trade, and also the fact that the markets were on almost a historic run over the last couple of years, that being the U.S. equity markets. Well, the last 3 months have been a wild ride. Down 20%, up 20%. Everyone, I think, scratching their head saying, was that just a short-term shakeout with a long-term bull market ahead of us? Or truly has some damage been done to the markets and the global perception of the U.S.? Axel, what side of the coin do you stand on when it comes to that debate?
Corey, great to talk to you again. It feels like ages, probably hasn't been that long ago that we last talked. I think you're setting up the question very, very nicely. We've clearly had what I would call a volatility shock. Like Liberation Day was a shock to the world. And that quote unquote shock is somewhat over in the short term anyway, because guess what? We need to get tax reform done and maybe we shouldn't cause all this turmoil in the markets at the same time. And the real question is, as you point out, right? Was this it? Like, is this normal volatility and we move on? I published an analysis before Liberation Day suggesting that tariffs changed the plumbing of the global financial system. And so I'm in the camp that this is much, much more than a volatility shock. But of course, whatever happens in the short term, including this volatility shock, of course, can overwhelm that in the short term. When you put a wrench into global trade, you're not just affecting the flow of goods, you're also affecting the flow of money. And the reference I like to give is there's a camp that talked about the Trader Joe's example. You have a trade deficit with Trader Joe's. Well, what people don't talk about in this example is that if you were to have a quote-unquote trade balance with Trader Joe's, your local supermarket, not only would you get fewer goods, but importantly, Trader Joe's would get less money. And so if you apply that to the U.S., when you inhibit trade, what will happen is there will be less foreign money helping to finance U.S. deficits. And that is a key reason why long-term rates have been moving higher. And obviously, there are some side effects from that, right? There's going to be pressure to keep rates low, either through fiscal discipline, and let's just leave that aside for a moment of how fiscally disciplined our politicians are. But the other one is, of course, the pressure on the Federal Reserve might increase to keep rates lower. And I believe, and the thing that's really fundamental about this is that the entire economic engine, what is referred to as the exorbitant privilege, is based on this sucking of international money into the U.S. And the U.S. can be thought of like a giant bank or a giant hedge fund where people borrow cheaply in the U.S. in search of higher returns abroad. And that's also why when foreigners borrow money and for invest abroad, when there's a volatility shock, people repatriate the dollars because they delever. And that's a short squeeze on the dollar. We haven't seen that, which means this movement to change the plumbing is firmly underway. But it means that the ability for the U.S. to have a blank checkbook is at risk here. Now, by all means, the administration is not completely dogmatic about tariffs and all that. But I do think that 10% baseline is the new normal with some punitive tariffs on top of that. And that does have an impact. And so I do think some profound changes are underway that people are only starting to recognize.
Well, actually, you bring up an interesting topic as far as how international funds flow into the treasury markets and how we've seen rising rates as there's been less buying. Obviously, we've seen the dollar pull back. How are you looking at this trend as far as a longer term picture? Some people believe the bond bubble burst in 2020 when we saw those really low rates, when we were at zero interest rates in some countries and near zero in the US. Was that the top of a longer term bond cycle where we're going to continue to see money sucked out of treasuries?
Well, I'm trying to differentiate between math and politics. So what I just explained was math. The current account has to balance somehow. So if you move something in one way, something else has to happen the other way. By the way, another way to fix the trade imbalance is if you address the disease rather than the symptom. The symptom is the trade deficit, but the disease are the fiscal deficits. If you address those, and if you actually encourage investment through deregulation and other things, you can get a long way towards rebalancing trade. So I'm absolutely not against rebalancing trade, just to make that clear. I'm just pointing out that by throwing a wrench into the system with tariffs, that's the sort of side effect you get. What you're referring to, I'd put a my macro explanation of that is the weaponization of the dollar. When the threat of sanctions became real to actors not friendly to the US, you're providing a quote unquote disincentive to foreigners to hold their reserves in US dollar. And it's not in their interest to dump all their dollars, but on the margin, they'll make different allocations on their reserves. Gold is a beneficiary on the margin. It's not like foreign central banks suddenly pile all their reserves into gold. But there are some important things that were set in motion. And of course, similarly with the terrorists, no country wants to be as exposed again as they were on Liberation Day. And so they will take actions. And all else equal, yes, it will have an impact. Now, this all has to be seen in the context. You point out that the bond market had been very strong, in part because of Fed buying, but also US equity markets, right? They've been outperforming for years. And one thing we didn't touch on, the Europeans. I mean, they seem to have an the Germany alone will spend about 1 trillion euros on infrastructure and defense. On the EU level, they want to spend a gazillion. And so that is pushing money towards other areas as well. And if we do get the fiscal house in order in the US, that is a headwind to expansion, right? And of course, as we're talking, the tax reform bills are under consideration, and it seems like they're not going to be all that contractionary, but it is a huge contrast versus spending over $1 trillion in Europe, for example.
So actually, again, back into the bonds, as you said, usually people borrow money in the US and look elsewhere for higher yields. Right now, bond market, you can get some pretty high yields in the US. And we did hear of a lot of people shifting some of their funds to money market, more safe plays. But then it also goes to show people are still willing to get bullish on these markets during this rebound. What is your thought about that global situation where the US does seem to be paying higher rates for safe investments?
Well, let me answer the question that I think you wanted to ask. That's my privilege. The one thing you use the word shift, and the one thing I like to point out is, and Moody's just downgraded the U.S. and they said, "Oh, but don't worry, because there is no alternative to the U.S. dollar." Well, that is correct. There is no alternative to the U.S. dollar, but there does not need to be a shift. There can be fragmentation. What we are seeing is that global trade is just going to be more fragmented, that financing is going to be somewhat more local, but there's also going to be much less of it. And so when you throw a wrench into a system, of course, businesses will always find a way to try to serve the customers, but there will be a disruption. And that disruption will be fragmentation. And it's not like some other region in the world is suddenly going to take on this exorbitant privilege that the US has enjoyed for many, many decades. And so I just want to throw that out there, that the alternative to A is not necessarily B, but it might be nothing. And so none of the above type of thing, but in the sense that the flow of money and capitalism is just going to get less efficient. And another symptom of that is, of course, the increased industrial engagement of governments. Depending on how you're situated politically, you may love it, but when you interfere in capital allocation, be that on the monetary side, where it's completely inappropriate, or on the fiscal side, where it's obviously an appropriate political decision, if that's what you got elected for, it does impact efficient capital allocation. And overall, we have a world that's disintegrating. The U.S. is no longer keeping global seas safe so that everybody can trade. Is more introvert. Old rivalries are coming back out. To me, when I look at what's happening in Ukraine or Gaza, are just symptoms of a new era, rather than these are specific crises that happen to come and will be resolved at some point. And so, through that prism, of course, there are always opportunities out there, and there will be very significant opportunities out there. But I just like to caution to think about a framework where oh, the money is just flowing around, and it's a little less attractive here now. It's going to go somewhere else tomorrow.
Well, Axel, couldn't the currency of last resort, gold, be that alternative where central banks around the world have been making it its number two asset on their balance sheets behind the dollar? Couldn't some dollars be trickling into the gold market as the uncurrency in a way?
Well, I agree to the second half of that statement. Some money will trickle into gold, right? Let's not forget that the gold markets are comparatively small. It's one of the reasons you have such great volatility in these markets. Governments throughout the world have moved further and further away from the gold standard over the last 100 years. And yes, clearly some countries are increasing their reserves, and it that may well continue. But you can only embrace a full gold standard if you have your fiscal house in order. And most governments want to retain the right, and that's phrased about as positively as I can think of, to be in charge of their own fiscal policy. Differently said is that providing gifts to your constituents through entitlements and fiscal spending is something governments are not going to give up easily or at all. And so, and the US probably has a better ability to kick the can down the road. What I've told people is that think that, oh, the governments are going to go back to gold standard. I said, well, create your own gold standard, but a government in debt doesn't have interests aligned with you. And even in the US, right, people get excited about the efficiency efforts of DOGE. Well, that's just nibbling at the surface. We need entitlement reform. And when I look at the proposed tax changes, there is no entitlement reform. I mean, sure, there's a few things on getting certain benefits that they're tightening that up. But there is no political appetite for serious entitlement reform. And why should there be? Because it will cost votes if you take away entitlements.
Yeah, that is true. And that's what we keep hearing, is just how much the government needs to take care of some of these aspects of the budget deficit. And they're just not willing, or I guess able, to do it, one or the other. In terms of this move in gold, very strong gold price. Gold has been going up now for quite a few years, but it has exploded since March of last year, just continuing to break to new all-time highs. It has pulled back after hitting about 3,500, but Axel, in your eyes, since we're talking so much about how governments are shifting their monetary policy, where have you seen the interest come into gold? What's driven this gold move?
Well, just for context, right, we manage over $2 billion in gold and gold mining. On the gold side, we have seen substantial interest, and I might add, maybe more with us than some competitors that have had some outflows. So I can't speak for everyone, and we have some slight differentiations. I don't want to get into them right now too much, but we certainly have a lot of interest. One of the things I say is that some views that have been considered fringe views in the gold bug community are moving more mainstream, and that trend is well underway. On the gold mining side, the gold miners have been out of love, out of favor for a long time. They've obviously done very well. The challenge for the large miners has been that they are so large. They produce 5, 7 million ounces a year. They can't replenish that fast enough. So they've gotten involved in these huge copper gold projects that are difficult to execute on time and on budget. And so much more of the activity has been happening on the junior space. That said, on the junior space, many of them are not in the ETFs, and so they're not accessible to many investors. And the junior space is very volatile. Well, on the very volatile spectrum, there is quote unquote competition in the digital asset space that folks that really want volatility, a lot of the folks are attracted to that. And so even though that space has done quite well, given how much the price of gold has gone up, and with that, how much the expected margins are expanding, actually, I don't think we have seen much. And just to talk about the margins briefly, historically, the last few cycles we've had, when the price of gold has been going up, commodity prices have also gone up, which dampens the margins. About 20% of production costs is just energy. And we haven't seen that this time around, or similar labor cost. Given that other commodity prices are not through the roof, labor cost hasn't exploded as much as during other bull markets. And so the conditions are actually very, very favorable. And many of these mining companies have done their budgets with gold rather substantially lower than it is right now. And so it's just investors have gotten burned so many times. On the positive side, it means that I'm not concerned about the valuations. I'm quite the contrary.
Well, Axel, I'm glad you went into the gold margins and how they've been increasing. We're actually at the highest margins the industry has ever seen. And when you look at the trends the last few quarters from Q3 to Q4 to Q1, and arguably Q2 is going to be even higher, is it getting to the point for generalists that maybe haven't looked at the space or maybe were burned in the past, where when you see the earnings potential of even the intermediate gold producers, not just the majors, but even some of the mid caps? They're becoming so large that it's going to be hard to ignore. Do you think that brings some generalists to the space that maybe have stayed away in the past?
Well, on the margin, yes, but it's not easy because the active management has been dying for many years. It's volatility, bear markets that bring active management back. In the gold space, in our analysis, it has the greatest dispersion of returns. Now, that may sound like a mouthful, but it means that the returns are all over the place in different gold miners, which means active management really matters. And so there is just not enough expertise out there to do the sort of analysis that's required, which also means that, of course, you can find some very good value. I mean, so that's a, it's a less efficient market. But money tends to first flow into the ETFs. And then to the other spaces, if you look at the major gold ETFs, they've actually had steady outflows over the last several years, and that hasn't reversed. I just looked at it again. And so there is more interest and appetite, including on what we do, but investors have just gotten burned so many times that yes, at some point, you would think that the interest is going to pick up significantly. But we haven't seen that. And maybe to make a broader point, when this huge volatility we saw in earlier this month was mostly institutional driven. Retail investors were actually the calm ones. And so it's leveraged institutions, hedge funds that delevered. You see that also if you just go to the gold space, the premiums in coins hasn't exploded. So there is no panic buying of coins or anything like that. All of that leads me to believe that we are far from the end in the bull market in this space, because that's not how a bull market ends in gold, at least historically speaking.
So, Axel, how do you make sense of, the GDX, GDXJ, those seeing outflows, not huge outflows, but still some outflows compared to the almost historic inflows that gold-backed ETFs like GLD and other ones have experienced over that exact same time period?
Well, they serve little different markets, right? I mean, we like to talk about gold and gold mining in the same sentence, but the risk profile is really different. Price of gold is about as volatile as equities with some surges in between. Gold miners, even the major ones, tend to be a tad more volatile in the junior space. They're literally options on finding gold. And so they can be substantially more volatile. And so they're used for different purposes by different investors. We know investors who only buy one or the other. And so it's not like you substitute one for the other. And of course, on a risk-adjusted basis in recent years, the price of gold has outperformed gold miners. And so people are saying, well, why do I take on that extra risk? And then similarly on the active management side, they said, oh, yeah, I get gold exposure to the miners. I don't want to take on additional risk, not realizing that buying the quote unquote index is actually in itself a significant risk because the quote unquote index is passive and whatnot. And so what we try to do is we try to not just buy miners based on the price of gold, but on company specific catalysts. And they can be more company specific, but they can simply be as these companies grow, they attract bigger investors, they get added to indices. And so, and historically anyway, the valuations tend to be higher as these companies get added to indices and things like that. And so that helps to add additional value. It's a fascinating space, but it is one where deep insights are helpful, and it's just a very small number of people that take the time to actually try to get that sort of insight.
Well, Axel, we could talk about an even smaller market, which is silver. And it's also one that people are interested in that invest in the precious metals equities. The silver catch-up trade has been one people have been talking about for a while. A lot of people point to the high gold-silver ratio, showing just how many more ounces of silver it takes to buy 1 ounce of gold. Do you expect there to be a catch-up trade where silver comes from behind and finally does blast higher?
Well, the reason I like to talk about gold, because I'm somewhat of a simpleton, all these macro things we talk about, they're all directly applicable to gold because it is so sensitive to interest rates, to real rates. Whereas when you go to silver already, because of the heavy industrial use, it is the dynamics are far more complex. And then when you go to the miners, one of the challenges in silver is that silver is often a byproduct. And there are not many, and there are not many good silver producers. Some of them are not even accessible to the public easily anyway. There is one we have in one of our portfolios that's actually a private holding, and I don't want to talk about it here for regulatory purposes. But they're not easily accessible, and so it's one reason why on the equity side, it's not the most beloved side of things. But yes, on the other end of the spectrum, price of silver is of course very volatile, and that has attractions to certain types of investors.
So, Axel, as much as we talk about, again, those outflows and the type of investors that are looking at the gold stocks, one thing I have noticed, especially in the last couple of weeks, is all the financings taking place. We were seeing a lot of financings focused on bigger companies, bigger dollar amounts being raised in the 20, 30, $50 million trend, that being over the last year or so. But recently, I'm noticing a lot of smaller deals getting done, sub $10 million into smaller companies. You have any insights on this, where the funding's coming from, and why we're seeing more fundings being done in the smaller companies?
Well, I mean, because there's a bull market, right? I mean, that's the short answer. I turned positive, more positive on gold miners, and when Jay Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, left out the words of what did he say about it? The tight environment that he wanted to have, restrictive financial conditions. When you ease financial conditions, these small mining companies, they're not. They often do equity financing, but they are in many ways credit plays. When financing conditions are tight, it's more difficult to access financing. And of course, with a higher price of gold, the opportunity is perceived to be much better. And so it's starting to get easier to get access to financing. So it's just that gaining momentum. I happen to think we're still though in the early innings of that. I haven't seen many big unreasonable, overpriced sort of takeovers or mergers. And so when people are starting to scramble and panic to get into the trade, that's when I'm concerned. But yes, the overall environment is friendlier, and that means financing is more accessible. And it's just a sign that that this market is a more positive market than it had been.
Oh boy, is it ever. And it does just keep on playing through that playbook. But you're right. We are still, it seems like, waiting for a lot more M&A to happen, to go further down the food chain, and maybe some bidding wars to happen as well. But hey, that'll give us many other things to keep watching for in this precious market or precious metals bull market right now. Axel, we're out of time for the weekend show. But again, this has been Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer at Merk Investments. Axel, it's always great having you on the show. And everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please remember, go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, subscribe, like, comment, and share our interviews with all of your friends. We love hearing from each and every one of you, so please keep in touch with Shad and I through email. Everyone, thanks for tuning in this weekend. Axel, thanks as always for your time.
Thank you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.